The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, still the dean for X number of days, Dean Chris Pacini from the College of Health Professions.
Hi, everyone.
This is the last time you'll be on our show as dean.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
But I think that we're going to have you on again.
Well, thank you.
Because every time you're on, we have a lot of fun, Chris.
Well, thank you. I do, too.
We're also welding the door shut.
You know, it was just resurrected as a memory in my mind a number of weeks ago. We were in the engineering high bay during the Great Exodus, as it is known in my department, where we were in that building as our building was being renovated. There was a hole in the middle of the high bay, and Art Hammond, who has also been here a very, very long time, was filling this hole in with sand. And I said, Art, what are you doing? He said, this is where they're going to bury me. I don't know why that makes me crack up like every time.
That is art. That is art.
Yeah, just you know, bury him on campus, whatever.
Total art.
Let's see what Professor Joe Avised of Communication Studies, where he wants to be buried. No. What's going on, Joe?
It's going.
Week four, man. Week four in the books.
Week four in the books, and
one third done.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the way I like to think about
1/4.
Well, you know, do we count fall break week? Do we count Thanksgiving week? I don't know.
I do.
Okay. You're more of a calendar guy. I'm more calendar. Of a, you know, ticking off the femtoseconds, you know, kind of guy. Well, sounds like Professor Evans is too. How are your courses stacking up, Joe?
So far, so good. Actually, I've been in the works now to take students to visit some advertising agencies. So
fun.
We got some good replies, and the students are excited about that.
Very
I'm not
cool.
sure to go to the advertising agency or just to miss class.
Both.
But in any event, yeah, something different.
Sounds win-win.
Yes.
Very cool. Taking any field trips this fall, Professor Dan Maggio of the First Organization?
Oh, no, just coming here. This is my field trip every Friday.
But don't you usually travel out east or something in the fall?
Actually, yeah, I'm going to New Hampshire in a couple weeks.
Okay.
No, it's just up north last week.
That's cool.
So,
where'd you go up north?
Traverse City.
Got it.
For the whole week. It was wonderful.
Oh, man, that was
I missed
gorgeous.
You guys.
Yes.
Not that much, but it was fun.
A little bit.
Just a little bit.
Not that much.
I was like, well, that's
can
really
you quantify
fun.
How much you missed us?
You have to be on vacation at least like 3 or 4 days before you really are on, like you're mentally.
You're exactly right.
Then you can let go and really enjoy. And then it's time to go home. So this time, I'm like, I'm just going for 7 days so that I can actually enjoy the second half of feeling relaxed instead of driving back.
Got it.
Anyway, it's wonderful.
Got it.
Love it north.
I wonder if Professor Kendra Evans of Chemistry and Biochemistry has any big trips planned for this fall.
Are you kidding me? It's Friday evening, and I am only thinking about tomorrow morning. Like, that is it. I'm so tired.
No, it's true.
I can't imagine traveling.
True.
I think I actually am going to travel. So one of my friends had a new little babe. I would like to meet that babe, so I'll probably
Sounds
travel
good.
There for that.
Sounds good.
Where's that?
Dallas,
ooh. Texas. Just far enough north that there'll still be an airport. That's pretty safe to say.
That's right.
As far as we understand.
That's right.
Yikes. More hurricanes to come. One of them is named Dave Chow. No. Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative
Spinning
Studies.
Counterclockwise.
So. Wait, is that the northern hemisphere? Okay,
it is now. So.
I'm just feeling it. I'm looking up at the map. I mean, Puerto Rico is there. 3 million inhabitants. And what would you, I mean, seriously now, we all suffered through, what was it, August 2003 with the great Midwest Northeast power outage. What if the government did its best, because of course they don't have power either, and said it'll be 6 to 7 months before the entire island gets back
and
online.
And I'll tell you that there is a humidity there that is unlike any humidity that we know from our August 2003 days. It is hot probably and very muggy. And probably not awesome. So my sister-in-law lives in San Juan near the university. Oh. And they really didn't even have their water and power back really from the first one. And so it's not looking good for this.
Pummeled again already?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's
going to
be a long time. And spotty cell phone service, if any.
If any.
They were showing on the news there's a Starbucks that's blown to bits, but it's... And there's people standing outside
they still have
the Starbucks because they still have a little Wi-Fi.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So sad.
Yeah. It's going to be a rough fall for lots of people, so let's keep them in our thoughts and prayers. But for right now, we are going to do our program where you send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. If you don't stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp or find us on Facebook. More food questions from Kimberly Richards. Pretty fun stuff here. How many people does McDonald's serve each day in the entire world?
Ooh, that's
wow.
They're on the verge of 99, was it, billion? Is that what's being served?
I'm sorry, I want to make sure I limit this, because there are some countries that don't have a McDonald's. I think there's at least like two of them. 120 countries have a McDonald's. How many people in 2016 did they serve on a daily basis?
Dan, you're the math guy.
500 million.
No, no, it's quite a bit smaller. It's 68 million people daily in 120 countries. However, if measured, we've heard this sort of thing before, if California was its own economy, it would actually be in the top 10 of all countries in the world. If McDonald's was a global business, it would beat several countries. 68th biggest economy on the planet, bigger than Ecuador and most of South America.
Wow.
Crazy. That's a lot of moolah. How many calories are supposedly in the Big Mac sandwich?
570.
No, no, no.
540 is what it says.
Wow.
Really? Yeah.
Wow.
Very good.
You
540?
Just had extra sauce on yours.
It's that's on the sign.
That's almost as much as that pumpkin cookie from Panera.
Yeah, but there's like food in it.
Oh. Or it's a little more than the pumpkin.
No, I know it because it's not as high as people think. There's a lot, many other things that have more that don't get criticized as much.
That's not what you mean, like half of Carl's menu?
No, if you go to a CPK and some of those salads, you look that up, those are 800, 900, 1100 calories.
Actually,
it's just less than a salad, some of the salads at CPK.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first chain of hamburger restaurants in the United States?
White Castle. White Tower.
Yeah, White Castle, White Tower, 1921, Wichita, Kansas.
How long till they got those chicken rings?
I tell you what, it says here, I just think it's sort of ironic. January 14th, 2014, Time Magazine named the slider as the most influential hamburger of all time.
What's it been influencing?
I think that's
really fun. That like ahead of the Pope? Or?
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's really competitive in the burger business.
Well, do you guys remember that one article in the Detroit Free Press not that long ago? The restaurant critic voiced his opinion against the owner of Voyager,
something like
said,
that.
Said, "Don't open another burger bar."
Right,
and
right.
He wrote the most eloquent response saying, "Obviously, Detroiters like their burgers," and he opened a burger bar downtown, and it's good,
and it's good. And please, some of the people, some of the time.
Love a slider.
I had Green Dot Wednesday.
Did you?
Green Dot.
That's awesome.
See, this is the first week where I started feeding my students regularly. So we went Green Dot, and the week before was Slows. So
I'm picturing them like in cages. You know what I mean? I gave them.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you or grades you.
Let's see. At over 44,000 restaurants in 101 countries, which fast food chain has the most stores?
Subway. Or Doctor's Associates or whatever.
That's what it's called. Doctor's Associates. Sort of weird.
That's the misnomer.
Yes.
What's Doctor's Associates?
It's the name of the parent company of Subway.
Yeah.
If you see it in the commercials, you'll be like, what the hey? Big time.
Really?
Which fast food franchise got its start in a Shell gas station circa 1930?
Sbarro.
Mm-mm.
Sbarro.
That was just some random guess.
Listeners need to know that Sbarro does not have a very deep penetration in the Detroit area for whatever reason. We never were a Fazoli's place.
There's no good reason.
There is
a Fazoli's in Jackson, though.
Okay.
In the midst of the Depression, a KFC. Certain person opened his first restaurant, KFC, in the small front room of a Shell gas station in Corbin, Kentucky. That's a current.
Oh, my goodness. I should have gotten that.
You should have.
I'm ashamed of myself.
Who is the latest colonel? You and your little red puffball failed us all.
McDonald from Norm McDonald? Norm McDonald, I think, is.
Mm-hmm. You've heard this one.
Who's the latest Colonel Sanders?
Oh, yeah. I saw a commercial last night, and it was just sort of in the background, and my 9-year-old comes in and is like, Dad, You have to know this. There's somebody new playing the Colonel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not Norm.
I get it. It's not Norm McDonald.
I don't know who it is. That's why I was asking.
You can't always tell.
George, what's his name?
George Hamilton
did one once.
Golden Crispy.
Yeah, he's the Crispy Colonel. Before founding Wendy's, Dave Thomas was a franchise owner from what fast food chain?
McDonald's or KFC? One of the two.
KFC. Yeah, he was a KFC person. Yep. Pretty crazy, huh? Sold his shares back. Started his own restaurant.
Put carpet in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Best idea
Why?
Ever.
It soaked up the Frosties well. So,
what national food chain opens its first restaurant Labor Day, 1955? This also does not have a very good penetration, I'd say, throughout the Midwest. Definitely not so much in Michigan.
Is it Jumpin' Jack or In-N-Out or something like that?
Keep going.
Jack in the Box.
Think
Chick-fil-A.
Kid Rock punches somebody in the face.
Coming up with almost nothing.
Really? Oh, this was just a few years ago. He punched someone in the face in the lobby of a Waffle House.
Oh, yeah.
Waffle House, primarily in the southern United States.
Yeah, yeah, we do have a lot of them. Like, mm-hmm. several per block.
There's nothing wrong with Waffle
House. Like, maybe three and a half mile
the Subway of the stretch. South.
It's the Subway of the South. Yeah, it really is.
They have some good raisin toast.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Oh, man. I'm sensing a trend. We probably have had this question before, but it's still cool. What is the most popular meal eaten in Japan on Christmas Day?
Almond boneless chicken.
I mean, partial credit, it's become a modern holiday tradition for Japanese people to go to KFC on Christmas,
fried chicken.
Which accounts for almost half of sales in Japan for the entire year.
KFC in Asia is unreal. I was told my cousin's kids, when their birthday came up, that was the place they go to. KFC is like, they actually rent them out. They're 2-3 stories tall. And I was also told you could also get English lessons there, too.
Unbelievable.
Is that right? Yeah, when I was in Beijing, they were all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. I'll tell you what.
About it, the Colonel looks Asian. I'm telling you.
Think about the old Colonel while we take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
George is right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Professor Kathy Bush.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Really glad. Very glad.
And on Kathy's right, from the Department of History, also Professor Greg Sumner.
Hi, Edwin.
Hi, Greg.
Please pass the Cool Whip.
Name the headsman who bungled Monmouth's execution.
Wow. Oh, really?
Ooh, Stephen the Clumsy. Nice.
One arm friend.
That's it, really. Now, was he a French swordsman?
No, he wasn't. Not like Anne Boleyn.
Okay,
no,
so they didn't shed such
a local hack. This was a man named Jack Ketch.
Well,
K-E-T-C-H.
Don't know him.
Name the artist who painted the Duke of Monmouth's post-decapitation portrait. I'd love to see that in the National Portrait Gallery.
I've seen that.
It's in Gainsborough.
No, it's not.
Darn.
No. Or Constable.
Really, the Scarlet Stump. That's a really horrible name.
No, they sewed it back on so that a post-mortem painting could be done.
It might have appeared in Hieronymus Bosch, but
that's why it's suspiciously wide-ascot.
No, it's no one. It's okay. Sir Godfrey Kneller, K-N-E-L-L-E.
Oh, yeah, Kneller.
Oh, you know him.
You know that name?
Oh, yeah, Nervous Kneller.
Nervous Kneller.
Ever since he did that picture, he's had these bad dreams.
And we're back. We're having a lot of fun with these questions, Kimberly. Thanks so much for sending them in. Food, 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 food. I will move us on to a non-KFC-based question. Which city in the United States has the most coffee shops?
Seattle.
Seattle. Home to how many coffee shops?
4,300.
1,600 coffee shops.
That was within an order of 10.
Not only more than any U.S. city.
Sandra.
But nearly a single coffee shop for every 3,000 people in the metro area of Seattle. That's just obscene.
That's one wired town.
Absolutely obscene.
Man.
What's the origin of the A&W root beer name?
The initials of the founders?
Yeah.
Atlantic and Western sounds good, doesn't it? It's the initials of the people who made it. Allen and Wright. A&W root beer.
It was owned by L. Taubman for a long while, too. Remember?
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh,
he owned it for a while.
L. who?
L. Taubman.
I didn't know that.
He owned all the shopping malls. Supports a lot of medical facilities.
Sotheby's,
Christie's.
Albert Taubman, yeah.
I wasn't thinking local. He just passed away, didn't he? Like a couple
years ago. Yep.
What country has the highest consumption of chocolate per capita?
France.
Switzerland is what it says here.
I believe it.
Let's see. Each citizen consumes 9 kilograms every year. What's 9? That is a lot.
But their chocolate is really good.
Good.
Yeah. By the way, that would be 209 regular chocolate bars per year per person. Surprisingly, the second biggest chocolate consuming country is Ireland, followed by Britain, Austria, and Belgium. The U.S. is only at 15.
Okay, so the question is it just because all of the Americans are actually just ordering the chocolate from Switzerland because it's actually delicious?
So good.
Poor Swiss people are probably getting blamed for that. I ain't eating no 209 of those.
Oh, my gosh. Who invented the first heart-shaped Valentine's Day candy box?
Russell Stovers.
That's a really good guess.
It was Whitman.
1861, getting closer. And it was in Birmingham, England.
Cadbury?
Richard Cadbury.
I was going to go Willy Wonka, but oh.
he's pretty close to being sort of the British Willy Wonka. Everybody knows Cadbury eggs at Easter in the United States.
They're very delicious.
Does anybody eat those, really?
Yes.
Oh, yes. But actually, they have these new mini ones, which are actually better because they're a little bit tamed down.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that's just so much cream.
Yeah, it's whatever it is.
Yeah. It's could frost a cupcake with that stuff, you know?
What second filling flavor was used in Oreos when the cookies were first marketed in 1912?
Banana?
They had sweet white cream, which is what we've got. Not banana, but something I would say equally
like
gross.
Buttercream?
Nope.
Pineapple cream?
It was highly flavored.
Butterscotch?
Mm-mm.
Tar.
That would be good, actually. Chocolate?
Butterscotch and chocolate does sound good.
It does. So this is gross combination, would you say?
I mean, I would call chocolate in this good in some ways, but
marshmallow?
No, it says there is lemon.
Lemon.
Merengue.
Well, I think it could be good. Mm-hmm.
That could be good.
Lemon meringue.
It was not as successful as what it says.
Thank
as,
you.
As the sweet cream and
but
chocolate.
Those lemon cookies that are similar with the white on the outside.
No, that's really good.
Those are good.
Those are good.
That's true.
And those thin Oreos with the mint. Oh, those are good.
My accountant gets paid with those. By me.
Every year we have to have this question. Let's make sure that it's all put together here. Which state essentially grows 90% of all the pumpkins in the United States?
Wisconsin.
No.
Michigan.
No, it's not Michigan. Michigan's number two. We pick up pretty much all the rest of
Ohio.
It's Illinois.
Mm-hmm. It had to be the Midwest.
The town of Morton near Peoria is the self-proclaimed pumpkin capital of the world. It's the location of Libby's Pumpkin Processing Plant, which cans more than 85% of the world's pumpkin. That is a lot of pumpkin.
That is a lot of pumpkin.
Very much. What is Georgia's most lucrative fruit production? No, it's not peaches. Something recently has taken over.
Cranberries?
No, but you're really close.
That's Wisconsin.
It's something that's very close to Michigan as well.
Cherries? Grapes?
Blackberries?
Apples?
People don't know that Michigan's the number two in this, too.
Snozberry.
It's not snozberry.
Darn.
What's
apples?
A snozberry?
We said apples.
Does it grow on trees?
It grows on a shrub.
Raspberries?
It's blueberries.
Blueberries.
Okay.
Blueberries for Georgia. Tenfold increase between 1990 and 2014 to just under 100 million pounds a year. Wow. It's only 70 million pounds of peaches. Sadly, the deep freeze the region experienced just a few months ago destroyed close to 80% of the blueberry crop.
Quick, hoard them.
I know. Hoard your blueberries. Holy smokes.
And oranges now. Because of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. Okay, what fruits have the most vitamin C?
Pomegranate.
Kiwi.
Kiwi I've got here, yeah. Very good.
What else? Lemons? Limes?
Oranges? Grapes?
Oranges, vitamin D, right?
Watermelon?
Vitamin C.
Oranges have the least of vitamin C.
What?
One orange has about 69 mgs of vitamin C.
Yeah,
so a kiwi has
Kiwi's
vitamin
up
C.
There.
So is it green? Is it green? How about grapes?
No.
Coconut.
Mango's got to be up there.
Guanabana.
Strawberries.
Strawberries. And the other one I say that most people would say is a vegetable, and it's basically in second place.
Tomato?
Squash.
Wild. You have to think about that. That's sort of ascorbic flavor, you know? It's good on a pizza.
Spinach.
Bright green.
Green pepper?
Green pepper, bell peppers at 120 milligrams of vitamin C.
So is it
I never did make sense that
green things
course.
Have vitamin C?
I'm sorry.
Green things, is that a
You know,
a
it's the top three are kiwi, then bell pepper, then strawberry. And again, strawberries at 84 mgs, and oranges are just around 69. So they're not the most. That's
just
sure.
imagining eating all three of those together. Mm-hmm. That's disgusting.
This is pretty funny. Now, I think I'll go back to Kendra with this one, because I think you're going to get it right. What fruit naturally occurring has the most caffeine? This fruit, Kimberly says, is terrifying. No, seriously. It looks like a bunch of beady, all pupil, no iris eyes staring back at you from bright red eyelids.
I think you
underestimated
my fruit background.
No, I believe you said it because you were trying to be funny.
Oh, guanabana?
Oh, you said guanabana. It says guarana is what it is. Guarana. Actually has caffeine in a fruit.
Well, now we'll have to look up and see if guanabana has caffeine.
Did you say guarana?
Guarana.
I don't know what that is.
I'm going to go with it's a tropical fruit. What is a tropical fruit? Alex.
Is that a question?
She'll take tropical fruit for 200.
I'll just answer it like Jeopardy.
Tropical fruit for 400. Oh, my God.
Wrong game show.
What country is the world's leading producer of orange juice?
U.S.
It's not the U.S.
Brazil.
Brazil is what it says here. 80% of the world's consumption.
I noticed my juice is not from the States.
Really? Yeah. Is it Coca-Cola? Is it Tropicana or something?
I get the orange juice. And it's not product of the U.S.
Are you kidding me that
juice is
brought all
the way up here? Is it the concentrate or do you get...
I've done both. And I noticed the concentrate actually says it's from Brazil.
No kidding.
Unbelievable.
You read the label. Wow.
I do. I do know how to read, believe it or not. Detroit Public School child.
Do you think about that carbon footprint?
Never.
Just checking.
Never.
What was the first U.S. consumer product allowed to be sold in the former Soviet Union?
McDonald's.
It wasn't McDonald's.
Orbit Gum.
But really close.
Oh.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Even closer.
Pepsi.
Pepsi is what it says here. Pepsi was the first one. Oh, my gosh. They gave it, actually, to Stolichnaya, which most people know better for their vodka, which is the vodka brewed in... what is it? Moscow. It means, Stolichnaya means of the capital. So, yeah, from Moscow. How old is the oldest known bottle of wine?
1,200 years.
I'm giving it to you. 1,650 years. Kimberly observes perhaps a little too past its prime.
Yeah.
The wine was buried with a Roman noble near Germany in 350 AD. It was discovered at the time of the Civil War, analyzed by chemists during World War I. One wine professor said of the liquid, microbiologically, it is probably not spoiled, but it would not bring joy to the palate. One of those one-sentence journal papers, you know what I mean?
It's vinegar. Let's call the question here. It's vinegar.
It's purple vinegar. It's carbon dioxide by that point. Yeah.
There's a wine professor?
Yeah. Vinology.
There's a lot of wine chemists.
Yeah.
California, it's there's beer chemists a lot of majors in, with the craft in Northern California.
Yeah, there's a beer producing degree. I think it's in Wisconsin.
That's
going to
be my next degree.
Maybe it's Upper Michigan, but somebody offers a degree in the production.
Michigan
beer.
University is going to start a program in cannabis culture.
Sure,
you know,
the wacky tobacco degree. So
we got Kendra and I know this. Our trade magazine for the whole profession, Chemical and Engineering News. These recent issues, it's like we provide the highest quality instrumentation for your analysis of cannabis and THC. And I'm just sort of like, I got to show this to the students, like where there is money.
You're going to see that enrollment in Northern shoot up.
Oh, my gosh. Many changes coming to Michigan state law on January 1st, 2018, by the way. Just throwing that one out there, too. Apparently, possession by a minor will become a civil offense, no longer criminal. I think that's going to make a lot of our lives different. That's just something I'm putting out there, if marijuana becomes legal and follows that. What animal's milk produces Roquefort cheese?
Goat?
Sheep.
No, it's sheep. Sheep's milk. Sheep. It's basically sheep's milk, blue cheese is what Roquefort is. I don't know if I've ever had it now that I think about it.
Sheep's milk, blue cheese.
Blue cheese? Really?
Blue style sheep. Is what it says. Okay. It's actually green is Roquefort. The cheese is white, tangy, crumbly, slightly moist with distinctive veins of green.
Oh, that sounds so good.
You really are hungry, aren't you? Man.
The worst set of questions for a hungry person. Just the worst set of questions.
I'm about to eat the microphone right about
now. Oh, my gosh.
For its nutritional value.
What was the staple Viking meal?
Mead.
No, and that's not what it says here.
Meat lamb. And potatoes.
It would be like big turkey legs.
You know, the very first line Kimberly writes is, when you, when you think Vikings, you mostly think massive turkey legs and giant pints of beer, which is what we hit. But while, hey, they dabble with lots of different meals, they also had a hearty love for these two things.
Haggis?
Mm-mm. Oh. A boiled stew of these two things was called scouse.
A chicken?
No.
Turnip.
Fish.
Vegetable and fruit is what it says here.
What?
The staple of the Viking meal.
Boiled fruit?
Yeah. Celery.
Disappointing. Yeah.
I know.
They would save the broth forever, and sometimes the stew would be left cooking for days at a time.
And used as a salve. Oh.
Or they bury it with that guy in the
pit. Yeah. Yeah.
Scouse.
No, that just doesn't.
If you boil it for days, there's nothing left except mush.
It was like the world's first applesauce. Oh my gosh! What beverage does the winner of the Indy 500 drink?
Milk.
Not the 2%,
but only partially due to a misconception. Louis Meyer requested a glass of buttermilk after winning his second Indy in 1933. After winning his third, he requested another glass but got a bottle. He was captured by a photographer in the act of swigging from the bottle while holding three fingers to signify his third win. Local dairy company executive recognized a marketing opportunity in the image, but being unaware that Meyer was drinking buttermilk, he offered a bottle of milk to the winners of future races. Milk's been presented each year since then, apart from 47 to 55. I think the race was suspended. Modern drivers are offered their choice of whole, 2%, or skim before they chug.
I think the last guy just dumped it on his head. He just didn't even want to drink it.
Watch. We're going to find out one with lactose intolerance.
Yeah, you know, things
can,
like that.
Can I get almond milk, please?
Soy. I've read a bunch of stuff online since, of course, I know you're a nurse, Chris. It's just like, adults shouldn't drink milk or whatever. I can't kick the habit, man. I mean, this is the worst thing in my whole life
That's a bunch of...
Yeah, I like milk a lot.
If I am lactose intolerant, please don't tell me.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to work on like 30 million pounds annually of cheese here.
I don't want to know.
I know. I am. I know.
Does lactaid work for you?
I do take the pills. I don't ever drink milk. Mm-hmm. Cow's
but
milk.
Even the lactate? You know, the
milk, yes, yeah. I have had that. That's fine.
Okay.
As far as I can tell. So mm-hmm. The thing is, there's no test. Is there a test, like a blood test you can take? Or is it just measuring your reaction?
It evolves over time. You know, I mean, I think there's just some enzyme changes where you can't.
Dan, can't we just get you like Febreze and Airwick and be done with? I mean,
I'm afraid
it's not like if you got celiac disease where they can do an intestinal.
Right, there isn't.
No.
So you just have to gauge your reaction.
Just got to go with the flow.
We'll leave it at that.
Dan needs time to go and put his name on some list to visit some doctor, so we're time to say goodbye at this point. Professor Chow.
See you.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor Avised.
Take care.
Dean Pacini.
Have a good night.
Thank you. And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies and the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.